And dear listeners, wherever you find yourself, welcome, welcome, welcome to this Tuesday edition of specifically the Holiday Reads, wherever you find yourself, obviously being tuned in to our particular, you know, either the frequencies or on the Eagle FM application. Welcome. And yes, the year just has 24 hours and a few hours left, specifically until it runs out for another particular chapter that had featured in many of our lives across the world, specifically the, are we 8 billion already, or is it 7 billion? One of the two, one of the two numbers. However, the particular discussion around the semantics of the population size of the planet obviously doesn't feature much within our discussion for today, because on the Holiday Reads, as we've been doing for the past week and a couple of days, has been, we're looking at genres, we're looking at top reads, we're looking at classics, we're looking at big names, we're looking at exciting reads, we're looking at subject matter that would appeal to any kind of reader out there, specifically appealing to any particular taste. And yes, as a reader, you will have developed, at least to some extent, a wide spectrum. I don't like using the word spectrum, but you know, that's currently the best particular term I can apply right now, that has good enough or wide enough appeal to how many people read. So you can go anything from being someone that reads current affairs, particular publications or outlets, but in many cases, it's also a scenario of, are you a person that sticks to conventional reading material, meaning books or actual journals and periodicals being printed that you hold in your hand, or do you love reading on particular electronic devices and the particular outlets that you wish to access through on these particular devices? It's up to you. I have my own particular Puritan standards and tastes. I'm someone that prefers a mixture of both. But obviously, when it comes to certain particular things that are, you know, that are personal to me, I like having the physical actual copy, i.e. ownership of the said particular item. Now, bringing us into another particular scenario for our discussion for today, we're taking a look at adventure thriller genre and some of the top authors that you can tap into. Now, these particular top authors, dear listeners, are similar to like the classical author list that I peruse through with you here on the Holiday Reads back on Friday. It's similar to the Western, you know, the American Western authors, which are also basically classicals or classics in their own right, that we went through as well yesterday. And in this particular discussion for today's session, we're taking a look at a couple of, it's actually a genre, guys, that I've ignored. Yes, it's a genre I've watched, because I've watched Where Eagles Dare. I've watched The Guns of Navarone. I've watched most of the James Bond movies, except the Roger Moore ones and the Timothy Dalton ones and the, what's the guy's name, Sean Connery ones. I haven't watched them. But most of the Pierce Brosnan, most of the what's his name? What's his face? Of the Daniel Craig ones, there was another guy also somewhere. Up to that particular, you know, level. But you would not, you know, sometimes put this particular genre and the movies that I just spoke of in line specifically with regards to that they were actually first written. They were actually a bunch of books that were written. Now, before we actually get into the gist and into the nitty-gritty of the backgrounds of some of these authors and some of these particular books and some of these particular titles, it is just fair to highlight to you specifically that in many cases, this was sort of like a gold mine for these authors, the period which we call this yesteryear period, the Cold War. A period that we call, you know, the Cold War, obviously because of the various particular geopolitical stances that took place then. And obviously because, you know, the world was not as integrated because of globalization back then versus as the particular issues that it faces today. Specifically because at the start of 1990 or 1991, the world was trying to roll out this new, you know, economic order or this new economic platform that tried to integrate all nations in terms of becoming a singular or a single massive economy around the world, whereby all goods and services are traded by all countries between each other. And, you know, there were no discriminations of access and stuff like that. Obviously, that was a plan on paper. That's not how the plan actually rolled out in reality. And obviously, a whole bunch of things happened. Besides the particular development of the EU becoming a singular zone, because you've got to consider that back pre-1991, the EU was not a single zone. And specifically, there were also other particular scenarios taking place. Hence the reason this particular genre, it sort of like overlaps or it laps or it flows from one period into the modern day context or the contemporary period that you know today, or that you have become accustomed to. But there are elements specifically how this particular genre and its authors try to adapt to the times and obviously try to keep things as relevant. So in many cases, much of the stories that are contained by these authors in their books and in their reads starts literally from the Second World War, or just in some cases, just before the Second World War. I'm actually contemplating if I finish the one book currently. This is a non-fiction book specifically written by a guy from South Africa. If I finish that book currently, I'm going to jump over to the next particular title of a book that was literally written that depicts a picture or a story that took place during the Second World War, just during the Second World War scenario. It's a book written by another author who is in the same league of an author whose name I saw a lot at home, because my eldest brother became a avid reader of this author. This author's name that was at one stage collected by my brother, his name is Alistair MacLean. MacLean with M-A-C, not MacLean with M-C-L, but MacLean being MacLean. Alistair MacLean is sort of like one of the godfathers of this particular adventure thriller genre that we're talking about today. Another one sort of like that also features into this, I've already name dropped his movies, and this is specifically Ian Fleming, who is the godfather or the big daddy specifically of the espionage genre. Because, you know, if you look at the reviewers, every time when there's a James Bond movie, you know, some of the entertainment journalists try to position they try to position the James Bond movie as sort of like, it's a unique franchise. Yes, it is unique. And then they, in some cases, try to, you know, mock the American authors who've tried to come close to the Ian Fleming, franchise, that being the 007 franchise, by mocking the likes of Jack Bauer, who has also written, who tries to follow the same particular initials like James Bond, JB. Then you've got the guy from, what's his name? The Jason Bourne series, also a JB character. If you look at the initials, the first initials. So the movie reviewers, the entertainment reviewers, they always try to mock the Americans because they say, no one does a James Bond movie or no one does an espionage movie better like James Bond. But if you ever had to look at the James Bond played by Pierce Brosnan, it was a little too squeaky clean. Let me rather put it like that. If you look at the James Bond that is played currently today, or was played by Daniel Craig, because the last one he did obviously was sort of like the fanfare for his character, and they'll try and reboot the whole series again. But before we actually continue, dear listeners, we're quickly going to take a short break and come back right after that.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
So coming back there from the quick break right there. And just where we left off before the break itself was, obviously, there is a lot of things to balance here on this particular plate that we've got, that we have served ourselves for today. And this particular plate being the action, or not the action, adventure, action slash adventure slash thriller genre, is, yes, it is predominantly for the, you know, the readers that are into this genre a lot. I've got two extra books there at home that I still have to get through, which are part of, I think they're part of the new, the latest kind of sort of like, breed of action adventure authors who are trying to put something together in a scenario. You also have to consider the particular time frames, the timelines, the historical settings, the contexts, that are obviously portrayed within many of these reads. In many cases, some of these books you'll find at your secondhand book dealership. And some of the newer editions will be found at your, new book dealerships. You know, those ones that sell new books, not secondhand books. A great difference between the two particular elements. But we are going to get into a scenario of starting off with a little bit of a backstory. So some of these books came in very interesting sizes. Now, when I say interesting, dear listeners, it's an interesting thing, firstly, to highlight various elements in terms of how the product is presented. Now, I'm an actual stifler for product presentation. Because of my marketing background, I love looking at packaging. I love looking at advertising and marketing details. You know, how does that promote or help the product to be sold? I love looking at the colors that are adopted specifically in the print or in the particular marketing elements to help promote the message of, you know, trying to sell the product to the consumer. And then you actually go and interact with the product, and then you look at how the product is set together. Now, with my vast experience specifically in terms of the print production, they sometimes call it the DTP, which is digital something print or digital. Yeah. But it had to look at sort of like the various kinds of graphic design processes. You see, when people think about graphic designers, they think that some graphic designers are just there to quickly put together a Word document, quickly design an ad, and then, you know, that's it. It serves a basic purpose. But in actual sense, the one woman that I met in South Africa back in 2011, she had to give us a crash course in 3 months, which was the short course of graphic design. She had to give us a crash course in 3 months, that she had learned in, when she was a student, over 3 to 5 years. Now, the graphic design that was done, and the graphic design that I saw, there are various levels of graphic design. There are levels that you can't even think about that Namibia will ever be able to apply here, because we just don't have the sectors. And I say this confidently, and I still have to be proven wrong, because you need the sectors here. You need it here. One of the particular crucial and impactful sectors that don't exist in Namibia, and we are trying to actually get the sector going, is actually the book printing, the book publishing sector. South Africa, which is our best example to go and leverage from and look at, can teach many people many things. But obviously, when it comes to a scenario or setting here in Namibia, we don't have very good publishers. We have very bad distribution, specifically of locally produced work. And even if you come and stand here with those highly politicized terminologies of saying, yeah, the government must impose things for local content to be on these South African retailers. Here's the thing. If people are not producing, you cannot be selling that. It's a basic principle that is founded within retail. If you're not producing it, don't expect people to sell it. First, get people to produce things. And that's obviously what the, what's that division of the Ministry of Education, the guys that are part of the library, they form part of the library thing, but it's at that specific directorate in education. Now, at the heart of that particular talk, dear listeners, at the heart of that, the reason why I started with how this genre is presented to a reader. Guys, I've looked at many book covers. Many book covers have done the job in convincing me to buy, to spend money on it. Stone cold cash on it. Because the cover, I didn't even read the summary on the back of the cover. Just the cover. Just the design of the cover. Look, I love aesthetics. I love things that look good. I like looking at things that look good. You can take and take that interpretation whichever way you wish to. Just so that you know, I love looking at things that are well designed or things that are artistic and beautiful, because these are the particular things that are impactful. Go look at the Mona Lisa. Go look at the Pyramids of Giza. The tech bros tried doing that stupid thing with the NFTs. They're still trying to do the NFT thing. And the only successful people who could literally leverage the NFTs was the guy from, the guy that did that various visualizations, but it's all artistic NFTs. They're all based on artistic investment, and specifically it's a piece of art. And an NFT is a glorified digital art collection, which in many cases people did not wish to explain on the internet until I had to go and find out myself, what are NFTs? And then people in Namibia were going crazy about NFTs. And then I realized, oh, people don't understand what a lot of these things are about. And it was hidden within words. So I bring you back. It's not the first time that I read any action, thriller, adventure book series, or books for that matter. But I did pick up a book last year that I had been looking at, that had been staring at me every time when it had the opportunity of seeing me. Yes, I'm now talking as if this book is alive. By telling me, read me, Dwight. Now, this book was written by Alistair MacLean. It's known as The Caravan to Vacares. The Caravan to Vacares is a book or a story that is set within a Cold War period, somewhere between the 60s and the 70s, somewhere there. And it's set in the southern France region, leading into northern Spain. But it's actually just that vicinity of what is now known as the mountain range between Spain and France is known as the Pyrenees. And that particular stretch of land between northern Spain and southern France has a unique particular geography to it, specifically that it is similar to Namibia's climate, similar to Namibia's particular, you know, there are similarities in vegetation sometimes. But the climatic conditions, you know, are similar like to what Namibia would be during a winter session. Now, the Caravan to Vacares, I would not call it the best story I've ever read, but so far, when I had to look at how condensed the story was for an action thriller, I was hooked. I was sold, guys. So firstly, I was sold on the cover. I was sold, secondly, on the story, because I read the story. And I was sold on the kinds of characters that were there. Best part of it all, it stayed focused in terms of the particular action sequences, the particular characters, their investment specifically as central characters or stakeholders in the storyline, and how they actually interacted with each other. All these elements working together. I have never seen, I don't know what the south of France looks like in real life. I don't know what the south of France looks like, but I was sold. I was sold. But before we continue, guys, we have to do some more selling. Let's take a quick break and come back right after this.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Papa, netefatso ya go rekisiwa ga mmua tlhakanelo re etsang banne ba mafelo a batho botlhe ba ba nnang mo gone mo Namibia. Seno ke kitsiso e e botlhokwa thata go tswa lefapeng la temothuo, ditlhapi, metsi le tlhabololo ya mmu. Tsweetswe re etsa ka kelotlhoko mme lo bolele ba lolapa la lona baagisanyi le ditsala ka molaetsa ona. Tlogela go reka gongwe go rekisa mmu wa morafe ka ntlha ya eng, ka gonne mmu o o leng wa batho botlhe ba Namibia ke mmu wa puso, mme o ka se rekisiwe ka tsela epe. Go nna le seabe mo dipuisanong dipe tse di amanang go rekisa gongwe go reka ga o ka fa molaong gotlhelele. Molao wa Communal Land Reform Act, molao wa botlhano wa ngwaga 2022, o thibela ditiro tse di ntseng jalo ka tlhamalano. Ditlamorago tsa ditherisano tse di seng ka fa molaong tsa lefatshe, dikotlhao tsa semolao. Ba ba tlolang molao ba ka duedisiwa madi kgotsa ba tsenngwa mo kgolegelong. Go kgoreletsa kutlwano ya setšhaba, go rekisa kgotsa go reka mmu wa setšhaba go ka baka dikgotlang tsa lefatshe le dikgotlang mo setšhabeng sa rona. Se o tlhokang go se dira, se o tlhokang go se itse, lefatshe la morafe ke la rona rotlhe. Ke thoto e abelanwang e tshwanetseng go sologela molemo mongwe le mongwe. Sireletsa boswa jwa rona ka go tlotla lefatshe la rona, ka go tlotla boswa lengwa ya rona le go sireletsa tikologo ya rona. Go bega ditiro tse di seng ka fa molaong. Fa e le gore o belaela gore go na le kgwebo e e seng ka fa molaong ya lefatshe, tsweetswe begela bolaodi jwa ditso lekgotla la mmu la bommasepala kgotsana ofisi ya lefapha e e gaufi le wena. A re direng mmogo go sireletsa lefatshe la rona le re le abelanang gore dikokomana tse di tlang di le dirise. Lefapha le ka se ikarabele mo tatlhegelong ya lefatshe ka ntlha ya go rekisiwa ga lefatshe la morafe go go seng ka fa molaong. Gakologelwa, lefatshe la morafe le botlhokwa fela thata. A re le bolokeleng, le babalesegile ebile le sireletsegile mo go botlhe. Ke lebogela tirisanommogo ya lona. Molaetsa wa radio o gasiwa go ya ka thuso ya madi go tswa pusong ya Namibia le Federal Republic of Germany go ya ka tirisanommogo ya German Development Bank. Go bona tshedimosetso ka botlalo, tsweetswe ikgolaganye le ofisi ya lefapha e e gaufi le lefelo la lona kgotsa ofisi ya dikitsiso tsa setšhaba ya lefapha la temothuo, ditlhapi, metsi le tlhabololo ya lefatshe mo nomoreng ya 061-208-7604.
And coming back there from that particular break, dear listeners, we take another quick break and another quick ad, and we continue after that. The 2026 applications are now open for at the Ongwa Diva Achievers Private Center for you to boost your grade 11 NSSCO results. We are designed to help learners obtain better grade 11 NSSCO results. Intensive, practical and teacher-led sessions with affordable fees with flexible payment options. Subjects that are on offer: English as a second language or Shindongwa, biology, chemistry, physics, mathematics, development studies, agricultural science, geography, history, economics, business studies, entrepreneurship, and accounting. How to apply, complete the application and pay the application fee, which is $150 Namibian. Email the application to Ongwa Diva Achievers Private Center at wu.edu.na. Alternatively, send your application via WhatsApp to +264 8165151 5138. For more information, contact Mr. Natangwe at +264 8165151 5138. Ongwa Diva Achievers Private Center, empowering minds, shaping futures. So coming back to you listeners from that particular extended break right there. Now, it does bring us into an interesting particular part of our discussion. Now, I mentioned the book known as Caravan to Vakarese, written by Alistair MacLean. But Alistair MacLean also produced a whole bunch of other particular works. Now, let me be honest here, guys. This is a man that wrote between 1955 up until when's the last one? Between 1955 up until 1995 actually, he wrote, okay, he couldn't have written the 1995 one, but just to be honest, since he passed away in 1987, obviously there's a lot of particular work that is sometimes produced by authors, and then some you hear posthumously that the family of this deceased author decided to bring out a book that had a rough idea to it, had a bunch of notes to it, and it was put together as a particular mainstream book sold under the deceased author's name, which in many cases highlights towards the intellectual property of, you know, how it's also owned. Now, Alistair MacLean was involved and directly wrote a total of 41 books, novels, across his particular career. Let me say that again. 41 books. 41. That's all. Another particular scenario is another author by the name of Leo Kessler. He actually uses a pseudonym. Actually, the name Leo Kessler is actually a pseudonym by an author or the gentleman by the name of Charles Whiting. Whiting, because that's one T, so it's Charles Whiting. Now, this Whiting himself, sometimes also writes under another pseudonym known as Duncan Harding or John Kerrigan. So, yeah, he's got like four particular pseudonyms that he actually uses. Now, Leo Kessler, has written a whole bunch of books, many of them positioned within the Second World War, if you can call it like theater. A whole bunch of them that also, you know, sets you into that warlike kind of a setting. I mean, he's probably written more than 50 books by the count here in front of me, which are novels and various kinds of things and various kinds of particular sort of like books. Obviously, in many cases, also focusing on the other side of the stories, because he tries to write, obviously, from a side that is not always highlighted in Western storytelling, which is a side of, you know, the German soldiers and forces on the other side. But it also involves a lot of espionage elements in his books. And, yeah, it has all these particular flavors. Now, it's interesting to highlight this to you as well. These particular readings obviously speak towards a specific kind of reader. Many cases, it's a man. Many cases, it's a man that loves the adventure side of things. For example, just like the books of the particular subject and topic of yesterday, like the American Westerns, which obviously speaks to a specific kind of a reader. I mean, the difference that I told you between the True Grit movie editions that are based upon the one author's book, the John Wayne one was similar like the Pierce Brosnan, 007 editions. John Wayne is always winning the fights, or it's like a Steven Seagal situation. He's always winning the fights. He's never getting beaten up because he's obviously the tallest character in the shed. Or, like the actual term goes, he's actually the tallest tool in the shed. So yeah, it just makes the sort of like whole matchup a bit weird. When you look at the adventure, thriller, action, genre that we've got here in front of us, much of this is actually placed within a war setting, an actual war setting. For example, a book by the name Ice Station Zebra, very famous movie made by it. I think Sidney Poitier stars in it. If it's not Sidney Poitier, then I think it's another actor. But Ice Station Zebra is set within a Cold War setting. The fear is because it's actually as the crew of an American submarine is trying to, you know, they're actually trying to dodge a Soviet, I think it's a Soviet destroyer or something like that, or another Soviet submarine. But the problem here is that the whole setting is the northern ice shelf, meaning the North Pole. Now, if you don't currently know in the context in 2025 what's going on with the North Pole, the North Pole is a massive geopolitical wrestling ground. I call it a wrestling ground because there are, I think it's 5 countries or 6 countries that claim, they claim ownership to the North Pole. So you've got Russia on the one side, you've got Norway on the other side, you've got Canada, you've got the United States. There is another weird country there that you would never sort of like say, hey, these guys, I think it's the Danish also. And then there's someone else. But the North Pole's particular appeal in 2025, anything from 1991 this way, is because of what modern science has discovered about the North Pole. The North Pole has vast amounts of natural resources stored underneath it. Same too also for the South Pole. But the North Pole is a lot more attractive because it's a lot more closer to the European and North American countries. So you've got, the Canadians already know that they are sitting on a lovely particular patch with their natural gas and their oil. The idea is obviously that they wish to, well, before Trump came back now in 2025, the idea was obviously that the United States and Canada would continue with the very lovely trade platform that they had regarding natural gas and oil, that they would ship, or the pipeline runs into the United States. And obviously, you know, the U.S. has to, you know, is one of the biggest beneficiaries of Canadian gas and oil. Then there's obviously also the other particular interesting thing of where Alaska is positioned by the United States, because Alaska actually gives that particular avenue, that access avenue that the Americans need to the North Pole as well. In many cases, you would argue then, what are the Americans trying to do with the recent discussions that are happening, obviously, in, what's his name, in Greenland, with the, with an envoy, a special envoy being appointed, an American envoy being appointed by Donald Trump for Greenland. You know, I think it was in last week that this gentleman was appointed, or the week before. The issue with Greenland is that obviously Greenland is an autonomous zone of Denmark. Greenland was never part of the United States. Obviously part of the particular announcements and threats that Trump made at the start of the year, or in end of last year, was that Greenland needs to be part of the US. And what is at the heart of the discussion has been the same discussion that popped up within the Rwanda DRC peace negotiations, is that the US wants access to critical rare earth minerals and materials for their own particular industrial complex. So, now that I've set that scene for you, I've set that table for you, imagine a scenario in the Cold War era where no one actually knows about this in the 60s. And this is when the book Ice Station Zebra was published in 1960. And Ice Station Zebra was just at that stage, and obviously you can think yourself, you can think to yourself that in the 60s, it was just chess being played. So, but it's a defensive game of chess. So, have a military presence wherever, whenever. That was one of the issues also with Africa. Africa had various military presences, or various particular, you know, espionage, you know, influences happening across the continent, specifically because of former colonial ties. Secondly, because of the position that many of the independent African states decided to take alongside, Yugoslavia, and who was the other country that went, that started the organization known as the non-alignment movement, which Namibia is party to, and South Africa. And that's obviously what Trump is trying to do, or actually Netanyahu is trying to do through Trump to South Africa by trying to emphasize to them, hey, listen, you guys say you are not aligned, but why are you interfering? There's a whole bunch of noise going on there. So imagine this is this particular setting of the 1960s. For those of you who, not to say were born, but you were technically observant of these particular conditions. And obviously there's a lot of things that happened here in Namibia that, you know, were part of that particular chapter in history. Now, the Cold War is one of the thriving historical settings that the authors of Leo Kessler, Alistair MacLean, what's that guy's name that wrote that Ian Fleming, and there's another guy. I keep forgetting this author's name. Frederick Forsyth. Man, it's the guy that wrote the whole Jason Bourne series. But yeah, they all thrived on this particular setting because this setting was literally putting nations against nations. Now, the interesting thing about looking at these particular settings is that they actually do sell. It's actually a particular genre that actually sells strongly. It's a genre right next to the crime, you get true crime and you get the fictional crime. They sell unbelievably good, these two genres, alongside obviously the love stories, but they sell. And then there's obviously also the religious books and the self-help guys that also factor in there. But the ones based upon telling a story, not about telling about the life of someone, telling a story, they are impactful. Oh yes, that's the guy's name, Robert Ludlum, that wrote the Jason Bourne series of books. So if we look at this, now I've only watched the Jason Bourne movies because I haven't seen a Robert Ludlum Jason Bourne book in Namibia when the movies came out with Matt Damon starring in it. So I could only get a bit part piece. There was recently, I think back in last year, I saw at one of the bookstores a book or sort of like a continuation of the Jason Bourne series that was launched by, not launched, but, you know, brought out recently in 2024, 2023. It had Robert Ludlum's name on it, but it was written on behalf of him because he also, you know, passed away. It's also a posthumous release of a title. So, with Alistair MacLean, with Leo Kessler, with Robert Ludlum, all these particular authors differ in how they position the same time period that I've been explaining to you so far. Alistair MacLean and Ian Fleming championed a shorter reading format, known as the novella, slightly smaller than the novel, but it is condensed and it actually hits you with a punch in terms of how the story is constructed. Easy to read. You can finish it within 2 to 3 days if you are a seasoned reader. At least a month, 2 weeks to a month. If you're a slow reader, meaning you're someone that has other things to do and you know, you can sometimes only just read 3 pages at a time and then, you know, you come back again. Everyone has their pace at reading. Now, when you look at this particular setting in terms of what I'm explaining to you, the Robert Ludlum books that I have seen are all novels. It's based upon a word count. I just slightly forgot the term, the specifications, because with a novella, it's at most 40,000 words that you've got to write. For a novel, it's above that 40,000 up. I mean, when we had to look at the classics or the classical authors back on Friday, Charles Dickens was someone that easily wrote you 1,000 pages. He easily wrote you a book which was 1,000 pages long. The other particular classics, and there was another classic I did not share that was all, that was part of that classical read list as well. A book known as The World According to Garp. It was a fun book. It was an exciting book. It was a book that was easy to read, that you could easily digest, and you could actually understand the world according to Garp, because it was just Garp's world. Yes, that was the character's name, Garp. The downside was, it was a sad but comedic picture. And it's a book that is a classic in its own right. Now, when we're obviously looking at these particular various instances, you've got the advice, which is sort of like the underlying advice that exists, is that you've got to start with a classical author. Yes, you can start with a new author, but sometimes the new authors don't have the punch. They don't have the oomph. They don't set the scene. They don't carry the weight in storytelling like the classical authors did. Why do I say this? I'll always bring you back to why Alistair MacLean is a classic, specifically for movie making. They could make easily a 2-hour movie about the Ice Station Zebra, for that matter. They could easily make a 2-hour book. A 2-hour movie out of this book. The discussion here, as I mentioned, is that it's an American submarine. Technically, it's stuck in the North Pole. But it has to do a weird particular mission, because it has to firstly evade Soviet surveillance technology, because as I told you, currently today, who are the countries competing for the North Pole? And one of them currently, two of them currently are the guys that were at loggerheads during the Cold War period before 1991. And this particular setting still continues on to today because it's still a disputed territory, the whole North Pole. Is that at the heart of the storyline of Ice Station Zebra is that the US submarine by the name of the Dolphin is in the American nuclear fleet of submarines, has to rescue a British meteorological team at the North Pole. Now, the officers of the Dolphin know well that the hazards of such a particular assignment is a very testing assignment. But what they do not know is that the rescue attempt is really actually a cover-up for one of the most separate or desperate espionage missions of the Cold War, and that the Dolphin is heading straight into a disaster. Now, obviously that's a summary of the story itself contained on the book. But you can go and watch the movie. If you don't find the book, we had the book. My brothers had the book at home. I just don't know where it went. But it actually gives you insight into some of the most interesting perspectives. World building, it takes you into another particular dimension of adventure and storytelling, and it just opens up horizons for you. A classic, which is a classic in its own right, is the following movie. Actually, no, it's two of them. They actually sit right next to each other. Because in many cases, some of the movie enthusiasts would say that Ice Station Zebra is a classic. No. The movie by the name of When 8 Bells Toll, and which is actually a rescue mission, but it's a rescue mission about stolen gold, and there's also an espionage element involved in it. And the book by the name Where Eagles Dare. Guys, you would not... You would not believe how interesting that movie is. It's a movie that featured Richard Burton and Clint Eastwood. Richard Burton is obviously a classical British actor. When I say classical, because he played some pretty big roles back in the 50s and the 60s. He was famously married to, what was the woman's name? Is it Diana Taylor? What was her name? But anyway, Elizabeth Taylor. Yeah, that was her name, Elizabeth Taylor. He was famously married to Elizabeth Taylor, another, you know, mega movie star who at one stage was almost also involved with Michael Jackson. But in this particular movie, guys, I've never seen, you know, when I've always watched spy-based movies, which are mostly American-based movies, you know who is, you know, from what perspective the story obviously pops up from, because it's popped up from the American perspective, and it's always that, you know, do everything to help this American spy just survive specifically in the storyline. For example, if you look at the Jason Bourne series, it's, you know, it's set in a modern day context and you technically don't know who the bad guys are. Well, obviously you would know because if you watch the movies, it's the bad guys are the people that employ him. But when you go and watch a movie like Where Eagles Dare, set in the Second World War, Richard Burton plays potentially the best double agent you will ever find in any movie. And if you had to read the book, you'll agree with me. You will never have seen such a monumental acting task being pulled off of a actor. Now, firstly, the story starts off with a scenario of get ready for this mission. You have this American agent with you, who's there to verify certain particular, you know, scenarios of the mission. And these are the other particular details of the mission with other particular, you know, operatives on the ground ready to help you there where you are specifically in the behind enemy lines situation, because that's what Where Eagles Dare is based upon. Richard Burton's character, guys, even though he is the main character, but the storyline is so big that Richard Burton makes sure that his character is not the only character, but his character plays the crucial role specifically in making the decisions to move the story on so that the story flows. Now, I've never read the book. We did not have the book at home. I've never read the book, but I've watched the movies. I've watched the movie over and over and over and over. I've technically watched it like 5 times, and that's still on a conservative counting, because it's a classic. It's a classic. If you have to look at storytelling, storytelling is key. Storytelling is key in helping to explain to the reader, or even the viewer, specifically, that technically they should not be able to detect the next move. They should not be able to. Now, I guess this is a signature move of Alistair MacLean, because I saw the same thing when I read the book Caravan to Vacares, or Vacares, Vasares, whatever the name might be. Caravan to Vasares, or Vacares, as I mentioned, takes place in the 60s or in the 70s. Where Eagles Dare came out in the 60s, the book came out in the 60s, because the movie also came out in, I think, in the 60s, or in the 70s. Caravan to Vacares came out in 1970, but you don't know which side the main character is on. You don't know what is the actual situation going on here. Because with Where Eagles Dare, the discussion was based upon, is this a rescue mission or is this something else mission that I'm watching? And it's adventure. There's action. There's bullets flying. There's, you know, guns being shot and things are happening and explosions here and getaway cars here and, you know, and car chase scenes over there, which is actually between a bus and a motorcycle. Yeah. Don't ask me how to describe that setting. You've got to watch the movie for yourself. But when you had to look at the package of how this movie tried to stay true to the book, it was spot on. It was spot on. Now I bring you to Caravan to Vacares. There's like less than 20 characters that you've got to know about. Less than 20. It's not heavy. It's not intense. But they all move, for example, like the planets move in our particular star system. In our particular, you know, around the moon, around the sun. I almost said around the moon, around the sun, how they move. But the main thing that you've got to look at and focus on for now is specifically the overall goal, which would be the sun. How the planet Earth is specifically, you know, doing its own particular thing, while obviously the other planets around it are having direct impact specifically on what Earth is doing. The whole storyline through for that book of Caravan to Vacares, I did not know that the guy that potentially looked like the bad guy and the main character were actually partners to the same particular operation that was taking place throughout the whole book. Until you realize this, when the whole climax of the story is building up towards the particular point and these two characters meet and they actually tell each other, you know, this is our real names, and they interact. And that they are both specifically, you know, field agents for, you know, the British Secret Service operating in France. And you're like, what? Really? There were hints? But not the hints between these two characters knowing each other. During the whole car chase, evasion, hiding, changing outfits, changing from hotel to a bed and breakfast to a self-catering situation to using certain money to changing the money up from something into local currency, because at that stage it wasn't the euro, it was Deutschmark and franc, you know, French franc and Spanish. What did the Spanish have? Was it lira or peso? I think it was Spanish lira. Well, they didn't have the real anymore. But anyway, so that was the setting back then in the 70s. When you highlight what these thriller adventure books or reads actually do, is that each one of them bring in a special setting. Each one of them tell a specific story. Each one of them contribute a dimension of world building and adventure that not many people, you know, are firstly exposed to. Sometimes that they don't, you know, get to see or read. I mean, just yesterday specifically with the callers interaction here specifically, you know, we all heard primarily that not every day you don't get readers that, or people that read or have access to these particular books. That is a given. That is something that you, that is sort of like an allowance you can do, because in many cases, not everyone reads every day. And they don't read the same kinds of literature or the same kinds of books or same kinds of content that you read every day. It's a given. But before we continue, dear listeners, we're going to take the short break.
Get extra big savings for an extra special Christmas at WB. Like 2-liter Oros, now only $37.99. 750-gram Crossan Blackwell Mayo for $37.99. 10 kg Buck Pro Fat Cook Flour for $139.99. And 2 kg Surf Hand Wash Powder for only $48.99. See all our December specials online at Wurmanbrock.com. We care.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo teto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarude dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Now, we come back from the extended break right there, dear listeners. And, I mean, it is pretty self-explanatory that you will instantaneously get hooked, specifically if you expand your horizon or you extend your arm, your little hand and your little arm in a bookshop and you go to this particular genre of books and you read. Here's another particular thing also to look at. Many people love watching the James Bond movies. A given. They do. They love watching the James Bond movies. But a fun fact just to share with you. The author, Ian Fleming, who wrote the whole James Bond series of books while he was drinking pina coladas, obviously there on the beaches of Jamaica or some other particular Caribbean island there, he was specifically a military veteran from the Second World War. And he worked specifically in the British Naval Intelligence during that period of the Second World War. Many, obviously, there was mass conscription taking place because obviously your country is at risk, your country is at war, and every able-bodied man, if you're not in the, if you're not in the police, you're not in the, in the other particular essential services of government and so forth, all men have to, you know, sign up for military training and to participate in this war. And that was one of the particular settings that happened. Now, after the Second World War, Fleming, and this is just to highlight to you how he got it right, to literally write about a fictional character who worked for the British Secret Service or, you know, special, not special service. Okay. Intelligence services. Yeah. That's different from Secret Service because he worked in the intelligence services specifically during the Second World War. Ian Fleming, the author of the James Bond series, worked for British intelligence or naval intelligence during the Second World War. And he wrote these books after the Second World War. Now, he drew from his wartime service and his particular career also as a journalist for much of the background, the detail, the depth for his James Bond novels. Fleming wrote his first novel known as Casino Royale, which was the first movie that Daniel Craig made that came out, was it a good 20 years back? If we think about it. Because Casino Royale was the first movie also that Sean Connery starred in. So it was a remake that Daniel Craig had to do. And he wrote all these books. He started in his 40s, you know, when he wrote all these books. And specifically, this was a scenario of bringing in a new dimension to storytelling for readers everywhere. Now, you're going to ask me, dear listeners, in terms of people coming out and saying, and this is an interesting fact, just to highlight. We'll talk about this also tomorrow extensively, but just to let you know, there's been a weird statistic that comes out at the end of every year about physical book sales versus digital copy sales. Now, let us be honest here, specifically about people, specifically those people that love going on these weird trends of things, anything digital specifically. And no, I'm not a Luddite or a Luddite, as it is known. A Luddite is someone that is trying to not follow the trends at the go. You try to observe things first and see, you know, what is the actual benefits that can be accrued from this new technology. I'm not a Luddite, but I'm also not someone that just jumps into the trend for the sake of jumping into a trend because everyone else in the class is jumping on this trend. No. I sometimes look at, is there something I need? Is there something I want from this? Do I want to be in this trend? Or is it just a waste of time? At the heart of all of this particular discussion, book sales, physical book sales, are outperforming e-reader sales. Physical book sales are outperforming e-reader sales. And this has been something that has been happening for the past 2 years after COVID. People are buying physical books. People are stocking up and collecting physical books. I mean, the whole Icelandic tradition specifically of Christmas was not going and actually, you know, increasing the wealth of the retailers by spending as much or basically bankrupting yourself just for 3 days in December. But what they used to do is that they shared self-published books with each other as Christmas gifts. That was an Icelandic tradition that takes place over this Christmas period. Which obviously helps to manifest and strengthen the reading culture, you know, in these particular examples that I cited to you, specifically with physical books outperforming digital sales. The downside of digital sales is that you don't actually own the thing. And this is something continuously that many people who just love digital trends keep forgetting, that if this phone will not switch on if it's not charged. The same too for the tablet to read on. But a book has been the most dependable, most reliable piece of technology that was ever created by the human being. You can tell me whatever you want. Electricity has one major flaw. The battery runs out. That is the flaw. With a book, you just need daylight. You can go sit outside and you can read. That's it. Straightforward. Straightforward stuff. The technology is successful. You can read anywhere. Another particular thing that also has been counting in the favor of reading culture has been a discussion, obviously, of, you know, what kinds of books obviously are being sold. Unfortunately, the self-help, the religious books always outperform. I say unfortunately because they are not my first two particular items to read on the list. Even though you can, in a religious context, there are various particular sort of like adventure stories that you can always look at. But in many cases, sometimes also how some people also tell the story, like when I used to go to Sunday school, is that they sometimes miss the point of the story itself. Look, guys, I'm sorry. I mean, if you read the books, the stories yourself, you would know when people, you know, try to tell you a story when they didn't read the story and you're like, huh. Are you trying to be funny here with the story? And then you, because it doesn't seem like you read the story. I'm just referencing out of personal exposure and experience, as a kid back in Sunday school, the three times that I only went to Sunday school because I didn't like the thing. Secondly, is that when you look at the particular genres that have always been strong genres, fiction, science fiction, adventure, love stories, they continuously just, they just perform. They continuously perform. And I'm talking just stone cold statistics based upon why does a book like, why does an author like Jane Austen, who lived 300 years ago, her books are still selling? Why does a guy like William Shakespeare, who lived 600 years ago, still sell across the world? He's been translated into multiple languages. Why does he still sell? What did he do? What did Jane Austen do? What did a guy like Louis L'Amour from yesterday's particular American Western discussion, what did Louis L'Amour do? What did a guy like H.G. Wells, who is known as being one of the founders of the science fiction genre, what did H.G. Wells do? And H.G. Wells is the author of The War of the Worlds. If you don't remember The War of the Worlds, two TV series came out recently. I know for those of you who love you watching your TV series, you would have seen these two TV series. If you did not watch the very badly produced take that Ice Cube tried to do of his version of The War of the Worlds, and then there was the Tom Cruise movie that was did like 15 years back that way of The War of the Worlds, it's technically a sci-fi story of a mass alien invasion on Earth. That book was written 150 years ago. That book, I'll say it again, was written 150 years ago. And H.G. Wells just comes back every time. So too also the guy that was, that wrote the story for, and we'll do this tomorrow as well. We specifically talk about this guy as well. What was the guy's name that wrote the book that of the movie that I loved? The movie that just was, it just performed poorly with sales. John Carter from Mars. The author's name is Edgar Rice Burroughs. Edgar Rice Burroughs wrote this book at a time when people were laughing at him for the content in the book, because this is the 1880s of America. And he's busy writing about sci-fi and the ability to teleport yourself from Earth to Mars. And the storyline is about Mars. And there's an ancient civilization living on Mars. But in many particular cases, if you look at the sci-fi genre today, we've got to know about cyberpunk in video gaming. We've got to know about Alien and Predator settings of, who is the famous author, the famous movie producer? Oliver Stone. Was it Oliver Stone? Oliver Stone for the Alien franchise. We've got to look at the Star Wars franchise from George Lucas. We've got to look at the Star Trek franchise of, what was that guy's name? But yeah, most of these scenarios were ideas that were born literally from either H.G. Wells or, what's his name? Edgar Rice Burroughs. However, my digression has taken completely taking us off the, you know, adventure, thriller, military, and sort of like the other particular setting that captures into and encapsulates this particular genre its own right, is because it's not too late. If you are sitting someone out there specifically thinking about also becoming an author, it's not too late to become an author. But here's a piece of advice. You must be a reader. Do not be someone that wishes to write a story and you are not a reader. You have never read a book in your life. You don't have the first cooking clue of what goes into the book, besides that it's just occupied by words. You must be a reader. You must be a reader. Now, some of the particularly important things also to highlight here, dear listeners, when you've got to look at the action genre, action, adventure, thriller genre, which has a little bit of a military aspect into it, is that you can find these authors everywhere. Secondhand bookstores, new bookstores, or books that sell new books, and you can find it online as well, depending on if you're ordering from South Africa, because I try ordering things from South Africa and it is just a nightmare. I mean, I must know someone in South Africa for me to get my things, and it's just weird. You know, it just shows to unreliable situations. Books are obviously the first particular products, books and clothing and other particular products are obviously some of the first things that obviously try to be sold on a digital retail commercial space and in an e-commerce space. But it's not always nice to buy them digitally. For consumer advice, as a fellow consumer, a fellow book buying consumer, you need probably a good 3 hours to go to a bookstore of your life, because you need to peruse. You need to go see what's there, what is new, what's there that you did not see last time, what is extra that you can complement your new particular reading appetite with. The reason why I cite the action adventure is there is an interesting particular detail that springs up with regards to one particular author. This author's name is, just want to get this guy, Frederick Forsyth. Forsyth himself, he wrote at least 339 books, because it said so here. If you have not seen the recent TV series by the name of The Day of the Jackal, or it's just known as The Jackal, the TV series, it stars the actor that played he played in that one Harry Potter movie series, you know, the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them TV series. Not TV series, but movie series. The main actor there, he plays the Jackal, this particular assassin. Frederick Forsyth wrote this book, The Jackal, I think back in the 70s or the 60s. And the idea behind this book, behind the storytelling, has to show you a different dimension that is not similar to another author. Now, Frederick Forsyth was best known for the thrillers such as The Day of the Jackal, The Odessa File, The Fourth Protocol, The Dogs of War. The Dogs of War, the movie The Dogs of War, featured Christopher Walken in that movie. I watched it. The Dogs of War is a story about a bunch of mercenaries, which comprises of Americans and some European and some British soldiers, or mercenaries, because they're former soldiers, who are sent to an African country. Go watch the movie. They're sent to an African country somewhere, because they always make up names, and they've got to literally, these things that we've been seeing for the past 20 years happening, like, for example, back in last year with the situate the attempted coup in Kinshasa that happened in the DRC. The attempted coup, if you guys remember, the guys that were on their way to, the guys that were captured in Harare, the mercenaries, who were going to fly through Harare to somewhere else in the Central African zone. Was it Cameroon or was it somewhere else? All these particular things. That particular movie and that particular book tells you sometimes how these particular things happen. Well, obviously, it's 2025 and, you know, so forth past that particular book of The Dogs of War. But it literally gives you insight into there because it places a context of a story of a actual thing that we have seen so many times happen. Being positioned within a book, within a fictional story. Books like The Fist of God, The Icon, The Veteran, The Avenger, The Afghan. I mean, many of these particular books, obviously, they have their but sort of like, you know, very punchy titles, you know, to set the scene, to tell the story. But they're good, each and every one of them. I get into a personal collection that I tried building up once. Two of them, actually. But it's this one is historic adventure thriller as well. The TV series of this particular author also came out recently, actually at the end of last year. For those of you that watched it, it's known as Shogun or Shogun. You would have read it that way, but the actual pronunciation is Shogun. It's a book written by James Clavell. He wrote it in the 70s, this book. It's a historical fictional book because some of the main characters in history, their names were changed because the setting resembles them, but not the actual event in terms of this British sailor who is discovered under the setting. So this is a different particular setting because it's historic, but it's before this, the setting of the action adventure thriller, wherein Frederick Forsyth, Leo Kessler and Alistair MacLean them are positioned and Robert Ludlum them positioned in, but it's a setting actually that helps you to position yourself in a part of the world that you potentially never were in. A historical setting that you potentially never knew of. James Clavell's books, in many cases, are considered as historical masterpieces because they help to position an idea to you. You are not just dropped there. It's not like watching a movie where everything is linear. No. Another author that I tried collecting because his books were, you know, few and far between to find in bookstores here in Namibia. Well, specifically because the bookstores are potentially in many cases also poorly stocked. Gerald Seymour is the author's name. He wrote a very, very, very good book known as The Rat Race. Now, The Rat Race literally positions itself right after the announcement of the War on Terror. So we're talking about between that period between 2002 or 2001 and 2006. The book came out somewhere there in between. There was no movie made about it. So as far as I know. So the whole storyline goes on this particular trend because it's a storyline where you're like, how does this very vague character that we don't really know what this character actually looks like. We just know that this character was dishonorably discharged from the military, or was it the Navy? The British Navy or the British military? And this character has such severe depression, because I only now realize that the character had severe depression. But the character is just trying to cope, you know, trying to survive day by day. Now, for those of you that have been to England, and specifically to London, because I've never been there, there's a specific side of London where they've got these massive flat buildings, these buildings which have multiple flats in it. And these buildings are sometimes known as estates. And in these buildings, in certain parts of London, have become social issues, meaning there are drug gangs, there are gangs there, there are, you know, teenagers that are delinquents or who have, you know, criminal activities on those particular estates. And the character is now positioned in there as well. The book is so good. The storyline is so good. Suddenly, Well, specifically, the event that was suddenly was the attack on an old lady in this, on the same floor where the main character stays, that it flips him, it flips his character completely as his, you know, his military training starts kicking in, specifically when these teenage boys on the estate, who are these sort of like quasi gang leaders of the estate, actually attack the one, this particular pensioner, this particular old lady. And, you know, he kicks into action. He unfortunately pops up onto the particular sort of like the observation of the local police on that side of London, and it puts him in some sort of a hot water. Then there's another book that Gerald Seymour wrote literally just after that, which also plays within the setting of the war, the global war on terror, which actually was a little bit more, had a little bit more tension to it, because this was of a guy that was trained somewhere deep in some cave, somewhere between Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia, and this guy was moving through some of the most harshest terrains and landscapes of that Middle Eastern aspect or Middle Eastern part of the world by foot. Now, the whole book spoke of a setting where all these intelligence agencies of the world were afraid of the one guy that was being trained, who was a former, and literally you saw this actually unfold in real life. Why am I saying this? When the civil war in Syria broke out under the Arab Spring, you guys all heard of the people, the young people from Europe, from the UK, from France, from Belgium, from the Netherlands, from Germany, getting on planes, buying tickets, flying to Turkey to go and participate in the civil war in Syria. You've heard of those stories. These were actually documented events. Now imagine these people fly there to fight on the side of ISIS because they were recruited by ISIS, all of these people. To fight on the side of ISIS. And one guy, and one of them goes back because the Europeans were starting to observe and starting to keep tabs of all the European citizens, meaning people that were Europeans, that had European citizenship, fighting in that civil war in Syria. And then those guys started flying back or making their way through the various refugee caravans that were moving through Turkey. They were moving through Russia. They were moving through Ukraine. They were moving through Hungary, through the Balkan countries here in the south. They were getting on boats and trying to move through Italy, trying to get back home. It's literally the same template that I read in this book. And this book came out before the Arab Spring, before Syria's civil war. The nice thing, obviously, is that it was all fictional. But Gerald Seymour has always presented a very good story, a very good presentation, a very good, you know, sort of like package for you to enjoy. Let's quickly take this caller coming through. Eagle FM, good evening.
Yes, good evening. You doing?
How are you doing, Angabona?
Fine, thank you, man. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Yeah, you know those gangs, eh?
Mm.
Those gangs, I honestly speaking, I think I'm not so sure where we are at our level, but you know those gangs, those children who are introduced to drugs and hard drugs.
Mm.
And all, even alcohol, you know, in South Africa, they are really dealing with those establishments.
Mm.
And you see crime is so on the rampant, on increase in South Africa, almost every day. You can imagine how many, not even gender-based violence kind of issue, but we are talking about crime in general. The one for gender is even worse.
Mm.
So now, you see some suburbs, where drugs and all this kind of kid, people are just killing and shooting.
Mm.
And those things are happening in those, they call them tabbing or whatever, those shootings. And it's actually, those things are happening in those alcohol establishments.
Mm.
And that's where you are. So there is even, you know, illegal mining. You know, this scale, small scale mining.
Yeah.
And all these other things. So I'm not so sure whether maybe our hood watch, I mean, our neighbor watch,
mm.
which is, I know in most of the formal settlements, those things are not perhaps going very well there because people are not coordinating. They are not putting their effort together to have a corrective action.
Mm.
So, and if we are not careful, our children will be introduced to some of those things. And we are not able to really control and put some measures there.
Mm.
And they also penetrate. How do you use that?
Infiltrate.
Into a lot of structures and issues of that net. So we need to seriously see how we can combat some of those issues.
Yeah.
Otherwise, in Namibia, will also not be safe. And thank you very much for these things, because I know in most of those areas, similar to what is in Namibia, so we need to seriously put effort and see how we can combat those kind of criminal activities.
But here's a nice thing, Uncle Bona. Sometimes they give very good material for specifically for authors, you know, who wish to write stories. But you are right, specifically in the crime fighting. However, Uncle Bona, I have a, what they call that thing? A pet peeve.
What?
A pet peeve. A pet peeve is like you have an issue with something. There's a core issue. The core issue I have, Uncle Bona, is that, I know, you know, the police obviously try to do their own, you know, they try to do their best. And obviously the criminals, whether they are teenagers that are exposed to criminal elements or are exposed to criminal backgrounds, they try to, you know, the police literally try their best to work at, you know, law enforcement. The downside of Langabon, I don't know if you've seen recently that there's a discussion that comes through from the south here in Rehoboth, where a couple, a boyfriend and a girlfriend were arrested a week and a half back, specifically for being, you know, a massive drug merchant on the town. And at the heart of it had been, the community and the police had known of the activities of this boyfriend and girlfriend combination. They knew. But it had taken so long, it had cost so many lives, it had created so many inconveniences for the community that they were staying within, that it actually took the death of it was a man of a colleague that I worked with.
Oh my God.
Literally for the police to react. So the unfortunate thing is, Uncle Bwanda, is that the law enforcement know. They know what they've got to do. They know. I mean, I read the police reports that we as the media get, and the police say they achieved drug busts through the help of police intelligence. I know that they have this. The downside is, Uncle Bwanda, we actually need to give the police more resources.
Yes.
They need more resources.
Very important. Even the training, it's not only resources, financial resources, the capacitation of them to really work. Because you see, you are actually correct, because like, maybe, I don't know, because those people who are to give information, we don't want them to become victim of like what is happening in South Africa. But most of those witnesses, many a times, they are eliminated. There could also be some threat, if people feel, the masses feel that yes, here we are not protected and things like that.
Mm.
So it will be very difficult for you to work with the people, those who can work underground and give you the necessary information without even pointing the finger, without even knowing, anybody knowing that, yes, you are the one who has provided this information.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is also that aspect, so that people, at the end of the day, they don't just endanger their life, just like a crime being committed inside there, in the street and things like that. How many people get involved? Of course, because they don't want everybody's minding his own business, our own business.
Mm.
But we also do not want people to risk their life.
Yeah, yeah.
That process. So I think it's something that needs to be worked on. If they are not aware, so the community is also then guilty.
Yeah.
To want that kind of things. So thank you very much, Dwight, for giving me an opportunity.
Not a problem, Angabona. See you tomorrow.
Cool.
And on that particular note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end of today's program. Let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow.